Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, pod people, and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the movie podcast where two films with something in common go head-to-head to figure out which one does it better. Unless it's neither of them, in which case, we've got a problem. On Monday's episode, we had a curry that was hot as hell thanks to Ridley Scott's Legend. And today we're watching Wicket Warwick play Willow in Willow.
My children found this baby alone by the river.
This child is special.
This baby will not destroy me.
Find the child!
Time is running out.
Elora Denham has chosen you to be her guardian.
Me? You need a warrior for a job like this.
I'm a nobody.
So which movie will be declared the winner? You'll find out in about an hour on Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Podders. I'm Chris Tilley.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
And Alex is away again, but promise, he'll be back next week so you can have an actual professional do this bit. But before then, some business, as this is the part of the show where I read out a review written by one of you lovely people, and we're back in America with a write-up from Purple Lotus 13 entitled The Best Film Podcast Around. Clash of the Titles is the only podcast I'm totally committed to. I've listened to every single episode since the beginning. Now, I love a lot of podcasts, but there are no others I can say that about. It's funny, it's charming, it's well-researched, usually.
Fair enough.
And it's bloody interesting. Vicky is always insightful and has an infectious laugh. Her What Would You Change section is always brilliant.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, she's not listened to the Legend episode yet. Chris brings the encyclopedic knowledge and keeps the forward momentum going. So that's what I've got going for me.
I think that is true, actually.
Momentum. And Alex kicks up the energy with his jokes and banter. And it's obvious all three truly love film. One last thing. I don't care what Chris says. The bit of small talk at the beginning is gold. It lets your listeners get to know you three better. Well, Vicky and Alex, anyway.
Yeah.
And the three of you together is what makes the podcast really special. Keep it up, y'all. If I can, I'll buy you all a round of or three someday. It's the least I can do for all the laughs you've bought me. Cheers, 5 out of 5.
Sold. Yes, please.
So, small talk. How are you doing, Vicky?
I'm really well, thank
good.
You.
Good, back to the movies. On Monday, Vicky was a legend, meaning today I'm chopping down Willow.
You're
so
a
let
robot.
Me take you on a journey. In the mid-1980s, having spent the best part of a decade working in a galaxy far, far away, George Lucas wanted to do something different. So he came up with Willow, the tale of a farmer wanting more from life, who definitely isn't Luke Skywalker, embarking on an adventure with a handsome scoundrel who is nothing like Han Solo. They team up with a princess who just happens to be the daughter of the villain, so not Princess Leia, as well as a pair of bickering sidekicks who bear little resemblance to a specific pair of droids. And they ultimately bring down the Sorcerer Supreme with magic, which is nothing like using the Force to defeat Darth Vader. And that's Willow, which is what George Lucas did to move on from Star Wars.
Yep. Well, you've got a thing, haven't you?
When did you first see this, Vicky?
I have only seen it once before, mm-hmm. and it was when I was a student, and it was one of those days, you know, either hangover or whatever else. And it was around the time, it was, so the people I lived with Willow and The Princess Bride were really cherished by them. So of those childhood films, they loved The Princess Bride, they loved Willow, and I loved The Neverending Story. So we would just put one of those would go on at some point every week. And so that's when I saw it. And the people I was with loved it to death. And that really, you know, that helped me. And yeah, I was interested to watch it again. I'd forgotten how long it is, which is annoying. But yeah, you know, it's much beloved and cherished, isn't it?
Surprised you didn't see it at the cinema.
Yeah, me too.
I did. And I'm pretty sure I thought it was a bit boring.
Right.
And I've caught bits and pieces of it, but never rewatched it in its entirety until this week. Has my opinion changed?
Who can say? Oh, wait, we can on a podcast.
Yeah, not yet, though.
No, save it.
So behind the scenes, George Lucas came up with the idea in about 1973.
When he was thinking about Star Wars.
When he was thinking about Star Wars.
I could do it here or I could do it here.
Yes, I mean, he does talk about these similarities. He says there's a number of well-known mythological situations for a young audience, and I'm going to tap them all.
Or one, twice.
It was called Munchkins originally.
Oh, no,
glad that changed.
That sounds like a nursery.
But he has acknowledged these similarities to Star Wars. He says, the underlying issues, the psychological motives in all my movies have been the same. Personal responsibility and friendship, the importance of a compassionate life as opposed to a passionate life.
Oh, that's nice.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, what's wrong with a passionate life?
Gets into trouble, Chris.
Rock and roll. but in spite of the fact he was George Lucas, he found it tough to get it financed as so many of these fantasy films flopped. You've got Krull, Dragon Slayer, Lady Hawk, a film called Legend. So Lucas co-financed the film himself. With MGM. He's one of the only filmmakers who does that.
Yeah.
He did that with Phantom Menace. I think he funded Phantom Menace entirely himself. Probably should have got someone overseeing that.
Never bet the house.
And he asked... he made a fortune.
He made a fortune.
It just was
terrible. Despite the film.
he asked comedy writer Bob Dolman to script it because he couldn't do it all himself, apparently. He said that was beyond one person's ability to control everything. And that's an interesting thing with George Lucas. He wants to have complete control over every aspect of the filmmaking, but he doesn't want to always direct.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't direct Empire Strikes Back. He didn't direct Return of the Jedi. So for this one, he asked an old friend, Ron Howard, to direct. But it's interesting watching the behind-the-scenes videos because they are talking on set and they are disagreeing. They're not full-on arguing, but it's almost like George Lucas is second-guessing him and basically telling him how it should be done.
That is jarring, isn't
it? Yeah, it's upsetting to watch.
Yeah.
They shot most of it in the UK, but like a film that came along a few years later, they shot the most spectacular scenes in New Zealand.
Right.
So Peter Jackson was obviously paying attention because there are similarities, not just plot-wise, with Lord of the Rings. Some of the visuals do look similar as well. He told Warwick Davis about this project in 1983 when Warwick was just a little boy playing Wicket on Return of the Jedi. And then 3 years later, Warwick was on holiday in Cornwall when he was invited to a meeting with George Lucas and Ron Howard at Elstree. Ron Howard did not want him at first because of his age. He was 17. So he had to audition 4 times. Then he was flown to LA to audition opposite a bunch of mad Martigans. He remembers doing opposite Matt Frewer, Max Headroom, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, John Cusack.
Okay.
Who I could see doing that. And... Val Kilmer, who he said Val just immediately looked the part.
Yeah.
And Warwick got the part as well. And he said it was exciting to not be behind a mask for the first time in a film. And Lucas has talked about the fact that his previous films were about the little guy against the system. He made it literal here.
He did.
By making it about little people against the system. Though I think Lord of the Rings got there first with telling the story about little people fighting the big monsters. But it is great to see him casting these actors in the leads rather than under latex. For a lot of them, this was a big moment because it was the first time their friends and family could see them in a film. It's also been called the dawn of digital filmmaking, and Lucas considers this a huge breakthrough. But we'll cross that photorealistic bridge when we come to it. That's it in terms of background. You got anything else, Vicky?
I do not.
Let's talk about the movie, starting with The Prophecy. So, we are told, is it a time of dread? Seers have foretold the birth of a child who will bring about the downfall of the powerful Queen Bathmorda.
Like Jesus.
Seizing all pregnant women in the realm, the evil queen vows to destroy the child when it is born.
Like Herod.
Yes. Yes, so we've got the Pharaoh Moses thing going on here.
Yeah.
But also, this was recently in the plot of a different film that we have covered recently in 1988 on this podcast.
What, dead babies?
Yeah, killing children.
I can't remember.
He ends up in Tibet. It's a comedy.
Oh, The Golden Child.
Exactly.
Yay!
Just 2 years before.
Oh, yeah.
Real similarities there.
Yeah.
Also, when we were talking about Super Mario Brothers, this was a plot line in that. I wonder if this is one of the reasons that was dropped.
Yeah.
Because they were killing all the babies of plumbers.
Sorry, that is not funny.
I want to talk about the making of Super Mario again. But, I mean, kicking off with infanticide is bold.
I think it's good. It's obviously biblical, but it's good old evil, isn't it? Proper dark stuff to kick you off. I like it very much.
Okay, good, good. So the midwife escapes with the baby in question, who we later learn is called Ilora Danann.
We learn that many times because they always use their full name, which I appreciate because I use people's full names constantly. Even to Mark, who knows you very, I always say Chris Tilly, constantly. Can't help myself.
Okay.
I know. I don't know why it is. So I liked it.
I've got some good name stuff coming up later with Ilora Danann, but they kill her mother. The Queen does. And this Queen is played by Jean Marsh.
Yes.
Who I've written is the scary B word from Return to Oz. Oh, yeah. I hadn't realised that, but this is in the same 12 months, I think.
Right.
And have you seen Return to Oz?
No, I've heard about it.
I mean, she's scary here, but she's scarier there.
This woman is very good
at terrifying.
Yeah.
And I'd like us to do Return to Oz.
What? You had a brilliant idea for what to put it with.
Wizard of Oz?
No, it was because that obviously... Shut up, Chris Tilly.
Let's just do it with Wizard of Oz. The midwife sticks the baby in a boat made of reeds, and then devil dogs appear. And
those dogs are great.
They kill her.
Yeah, they do. They ravage her.
I think the version... I'm taking you... You watch this on Disney Plus.
Yes.
You see her basically getting ravaged.
Yeah.
When it was released in England, you didn't see that. They cut that.
It's too much for us.
Yes. The Americans got it. We didn't. We get it now.
Yeah.
Rottweilers in masks.
Oh, really? God,
yes.
That's fucking terrifying.
It is a little bit, isn't it?
I'm scared shitless of Rottweilers.
Yeah, I guess there were a lot of horrible Rottweiler stories when we were young. They're just dogs.
Yeah, you are taught that that's gonna bite your face.
It was literally the only thing on the news in the late 80s.
And dog poo, yeah. Mind the poo, and also they will kill you.
Yeah. Right, section two, the call to adventure, or one of the many. Ilora rocks up to a village called Nelwyn, where we meet Willow Ufgood and his weird accent.
It is weird. What is it?
So he did have someone come in and train him to speak mid-Atlantic. They didn't want him to use his English accent, which I think is a shame. It would have made no difference to the film. I wouldn't have sat there going, oh, he's English, they're American.
That makes no sense.
But they wanted him to be sort of transatlantic, sort of Northern America, Northern English, American, whatever. So he's mid-Atlantic.
Fine.
It's a bit strange. Warwick Davis is 17 years old here, and he's got two kids.
Uh-huh.
They're not babies.
No.
I estimate he's been shagging from the age of 10.
I would say so, yes.
A bit weird.
I mean, yeah, how old are the kids? Like 4 or 5?
A bit older than that, I'd say.
I don't know.
One is a little bit older than that.
I mean, it's funny because Warwick Davis does look very young as well. It's not like, I don't know, 17, you could have said 19 and I would have believed you, but you could have said, I don't know, he seems very young.
But this is the reason Ron Howard didn't want him.
Yeah.
But him and his family fall in love with this baby. And you would do because...
My
it's,
God.
It's wearing a tiny ginger wig.
Is it a wig?
Yes.
Thank God.
Yes. And they attached it with food syrup because they couldn't use glue.
This poor...
Because it's a baby.
It blows my head off, like baby casting, because these two, they're twins, as they often are, and the pair of them are movie stars.
Yes.
They're absolutely incredible.
As we said on Monday, best actors in the film.
Definitely. But also, when I saw the baby, I was like, that baby's wearing a wig. I hope. But only because it just made me a bit like, why my baby's always like hairless freaks until they're like 3 years old. But imagine being that baby and you've got this sticky thing on your head and then you just cry constantly,
Should've
I imagine.
Cast me. I was born hairy as a monkey. they use syrup to stick it on, which is Cockney rhyming slang for wig.
It's not.
Yeah, syrup is wig.
Why?
Oh God, I've forgotten this. I did know this. You do not know this, but it's just...
No.
Okay, syrup is weak.
I'll take a word.
I've forgotten why, and I didn't know this.
Sticky.
No, it's something weird, which is why I've forgotten it.
Okay.
I'll tell you by the end.
All right.
In a bit where you're talking. head to a carnival in town, which is shot at Brockett Hall just outside London.
Right.
This is the largest gathering of little people ever for a film at the time. Yeah, even more than Wizard of Oz. Willow's doing magic badly.
Yeah.
The High Aldwyn arrives, played by Billy Barty.
Billy Barty, yes.
Everyone's in awe, which all these dwarf actors were, because he is the most famous small actor. Mm. And he's really good. He has real presence.
Yeah, for sure.
And he's head of a council that Willow appears in front of. He wants to be an apprentice. He fails again. And then the devil dogs attack.
Yeah, and so Willow's daughter, Mims. My God. Oh my God, it's terrifying.
Her crying.
Yeah, it's real.
It's
so scary and sad.
Apart from the baby, that's the best acting in the dog.
Yeah.
In the film. But Tony Cox from Bad Santa does stab a dog. You recognise him?
Yeah, I do.
I want him to swear. There's a council scene now, and there's just some interesting behind-the-scenes stuff here. I watched the film with the commentary on that Warwick Davis does, and he points out an actress in the background in a blue dress. And he said, I didn't meet her that day, but that woman became my wife.
Oh, that's nice.
And even his father-in-law, her dad, is in the scene. So it's a real family thing, but they didn't know each other. But also, a character shouts out, who'll do that, mm-hmm. in this council scene? That is Kenny Baker.
Who's that?
Of Star Wars fame.
What is he in Star Wars?
He's a droid.
Oh, is he? Sorry.
He's a little droid.
Yeah.
And although he's in maybe a dozen George Lucas movies.
Yeah.
This is the only time he has a line of his own.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, so this is quite a historic moment for young Kenny.
Yeah, I don't recognise him without his casing on.
Oh, he's the best.
Yeah.
So the council says the baby must be taken to a crossroads for some reason or other.
No idea.
So they assemble a fellowship. Give Willow some magic acorns.
And some hair.
Yeah. A ponytail.
Yes, a lock, a braid.
Yes.
Which I like it, but I think it's a bit of a shame. It detracts from the significance of the acorns, because it's like, take these acorns, believe in yourself. Take my hair, believe in yourself.
Yeah, but the acorns.
Yeah.
I feel like they shouldn't be magic. I feel like he should think they're magic.
I 100% thought they weren't at all magic. And I still think they might not be, because by the time he uses them, he's supposed to have a bit more self-belief. So I think they probably are just acorns.
Okay.
I don't know.
Oh, no. I like that reading much better than mine. And so now we're into the actual adventure. So we've got the dwarves marching through forests and past waterfalls, which is all very Lord of the Rings. Really beautiful visuals here. The Queen sends her daughter, Saoirse, played by Joanne Whalley, and General Kale. plays by Raiders of the Lost Ark's Pat Roach. Do you remember?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Remember who he is in Pat Roach? In Raiders, sorry?
He is... No.
So he is... Well, he has several roles in the Indiana Jones movies, but he is the Nazi that gets punched into the plane propeller.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. And
he's in all of the Indiana Jones movies playing different thugs
that
has fights. I think he might be the swordman as well that he shoots as well in Raiders. But and we talked about this. I think it was on the Temple of Doom episode.
Yeah.
So America's most famous critic, Pauline Kael, did not like Raiders. Sorry, Temple of Doom.
Yes.
And so George Lucas named the character General Kale.
Oh, we did talk about that. Yeah. Petty bullshit.
Stupid. It's childish, immature.
Yeah. It's funny at first, and then after day 84 of the shoot, it's not funny anymore.
No, not good, George. And there's more of this later on, more of this stupidity. But they're charged with finding the baby so they can exile the child spirit into oblivion. Our gang, our fellowship, reach the crossroads and find Mag Martigan, played by Val Kilmer. He's in a cage. He claims he's the greatest swordsman who ever lived. He's got really dirty teeth.
He has, and they get cleaned up. I thought he was going to keep the dirty teeth.
Yeah.
Because it's more representative of his lifestyle. But the minute he needs to be handsome, his teeth are sorted.
I checked this the second time. You do actually see him cleaning them. I thought it was magical Hollywood nonsense, but he's wiping them. He's wiping them in the morning, because most of the fellowship leave, and I don't blame them, as we spend too much time at these crossroads.
Yeah.
Mad Martigan calls Willow a peck several times, which I think is racist insults.
Mm.
Warwick Davis says that "don't call me a peck" is what he's asked to say the most by people who come up to him.
Oh, okay.
Don't call me a peck.
Yeah.
But yeah, they end up staying overnight. So for morning, he's washing his teeth. I just don't know why this is lasting so long. a bunch of horses come trotting by. I say trotting, running. And if you watch this scene, one of them really nearly hits Warwick Davis.
Oh, really?
He's supposed to jump out of the way, but it comes much closer than it could have. We could have had a fatality on this set. But Willow frees Mad Martigan and gives him the baby.
Yeah. And the baby smiles. baby.
The baby smiles.
Oh my God.
Syrup and fig wig.
I nearly said syrup and fig, but not for any other reason that it rhymes with wig.
Syrup and fig.
What? I think you've made that up.
No, that's a fact.
Fine. Because the only syrups in the world are made of figs.
There we go. Mad Martigan.
Yeah.
He's not very mad, is he?
No, he's not.
I feel like you've got to be a bit eccentric.
Yeah.
A bit nuts.
He's quite impulsive, maybe.
I suppose so. I think he needs more edge.
Yeah.
I think when he comes out of here, he should betray them, or he should be nasty or difficult at first, because
he's instantly all right.
He's instantly. He never. We're told he's a thief and a bit of a villain and a scoundrel, a bit more of a Han Solo type, but he never does anything really bad, does he? He does what he's told and does what he's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So when he's passing the baby over, Warwick Davis says the baby's name,
right,
Laura Dinan. But they realised in post-production he doesn't know the baby's name yet.
He doesn't know.
So he had to dub Little One over ADR. Brownies appear now. Steal the baby. They capture Willow and his mate. They tie him up and drag him away, and it all becomes very Gulliver's Travel.
Mm.
So the brownies.
Hate them.
Yes. They feel like they're from a Monty Python film.
Yeah.
But not a funny one.
And they're there.
They're bickering like the droids in Star Wars,
yeah,
and they're sort of narrating stuff as well, like the droids in Star Wars do. They're just awful.
They are, aren't they? I thought I was just being unkind. I remember not liking them the first time.
Yeah.
And I was in a good mood when I watched this, and I wasn't just like, oh, fuck off. But I just found, I'd like a comedy double act, and I understand they're there for comic relief, and I get all of that. And I like C-3PO and R2-D2's thing. But I just found these two, it just didn't work for me. I don't know what it is. I just don't enjoy it. And I wish they would go away.
Yeah, they're played by Rick Overton and Kevin Pollack, who are both dabbled in comedy, done some stand-up and stuff, but it just does new work here.
Mm.
Fairy Queen appears and orders them to be freed. This is when we learn the baby's Laura Dinan and must survive to fulfil her destiny, which I'm guessing is what, in part, this new TV show on Disney Plus is going to be about.
Oh, nice.
With Warwick Davis in, because, that would make sense.
She's all grown up.
Yes. But she gives Willow a great wand and sends him to find an enchantress called Finn Raziel.
Yeah.
So this is sort of a side mission now.
Yeah.
But before we get that side mission, let's take a break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we're back with the first of our side missions. So Willow is heading to a mysterious island all on his own. But first, he pops into a pub for some milk. Have you ever done that, Vicky?
No, because I don't drink glasses of milk.
It's for the baby.
Sick.
It's for the baby.
I would do it for a baby.
You'd go into a pub
and ask for some free milk.
Okay. Yeah, and then they're inside the pub, and Kevin Pollak's character takes a love potion and falls in love with a cat.
I hated that.
Agreed. We find Mad Martigan, who's been shagging a married woman.
He's been shagging a married woman.
And he dresses up as a woman.
Dressed up as a woman so that her husband,
Lug arrives and wants to, he wants him not to kill him, but then Lug wants to bang him.
Yes.
But which he makes clear by saying, "Wanna breed?"
Yeah.
Which is a strange thing.
It's that kind of pub, Chris.
Yeah, but it shouldn't be that kind of film.
All I kept thinking was, Mad Martigan as Hilda, the female character he's impersonating, he's put on fake boobs and makeup and a dress and a scarf around his head. Mm. Making fake boobs probably takes at least a minute, 2 minutes. It would have been quicker for him to just leave.
Yeah, but she might be a slag and have those boobs ready for any time a bloke's there.
Just to throw
this
on.
This might be regular. Yeah,
that's true. This is how I do it.
They make quite a swashbuckling escape here in a cart. The scene's got very Indiana Jones vibes to it.
Yeah, I like the stunts on the horse.
Yeah, it was fun. Warwick's pointing out one scene. Val Kilmer's on the back of the truck holding on with his legs trailing behind. And he said, those aren't his legs. No. He's kneeling on the back of the truck and that's a stuntman's legs just going...
bobbing along.
Yeah. They escape. Mad Martigan refuses the call, but only briefly, as turns out they're all going the same direction.
Great, handy.
So it feels like the writers aren't trying that hard here. Like, he's got to refuse the call. Let's have him do it for 10 seconds, but then change his mind just because they're going the same way.
Yeah.
Willow finds the sorceress. She's a possum.
It's brilliant. I love that possum.
Did you? Okay,
love her. She's just great. And also the possum. But again, I'm having a bit of a weird week because I've got these baby rabbits.
Yes.
And then I've been very clear that I don't want any more children. And I'm certain about that. But then I got these rabbits and something has just shifted inside me a bit where my reaction to them is very maternal. Like,
you want to have a rabbit?
No.
I don't think you can.
I think they might be my babies.
Okay.
I'm really, really stressed about them. As in, I need to protect them at all costs and we'll do all of that. And then I saw the baby in this and I was a mess. I was just like, that is, fuck me, that is a cute baby. And then I saw the possum and I was like, I love the possum. And I was like, what? This is not me. What is happening?
So this isn't good.
No.
And I need to warn you now, one of them, probably Ted, will be eaten by a fox.
Oh, God, don't!
Just, no, deal with the grief now because it's coming.
I just can't.
It'll just happen.
I just, will the kids be bothered? If the children can't be bothered, I can woman up about it and be strong, but...
They'll be a little bit sad because it's because it's quite a violent death, and so there's blood and guts all over the shed. Not that I've.
I haven't told you though. We've bought a thing that sprays water at anything that walks past the perimeter of it.
Okay.
So it's to scare off the foxes.
Okay.
But the trouble is, we've got a cat, and now the cat hates us because when she goes into the garden, she gets sprayed quite hard with cold water.
The cat will like it in the summer.
Yeah. Yeah.
I reckon.
I guess.
I'm going to tell you about a mystery now.
Go on.
A mystery that was raging on the internet for decades.
Nice. Okay.
It's the mystery of the third acorn.
Oh, wow.
Willow is given 3 acorns, but only uses 2.
Right.
And I found this on the Lucasfilm website because in 2013, the mystery was finally uncovered and sorted in a newly revealed deleted scene. So he arrives at the lake where the sorceress is in exile. He encounters a boy who tells him not to travel across the lake and then disappears. Later, that boy attacks Willow's boat and transforms into a monstrous fish. Mm-hmm. And after nearly being eaten by the creature, Willow throws the acorn at the foe, turning him stone, knocking him straight to the bottom of the water. And it was cut due to some issues with the visual effects.
Mm.
But it does leave an acorn hanging.
Oh, my God. An acorn hanging. That's nice. Cute.
So, Saoirse takes them all hostage and heads to the queen. The potion transforms the possum into a crow. Mad Martigan, it's just stuff happening now. It's just stuff and it's sort of dragging it out. Mad Martigan breathes this dust of broken hearts, which makes you horny for whatever you see.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that with one of the brownies falling in love with a cat after he's taken it. Mad Martigan takes a portion, doesn't want to fuck Willow, who's the first person he sees. And I think that's a missed opportunity.
Sure.
Let's be progressive.
And also rules are rules.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to fuck a cat.
Yeah.
Shag a willow.
Sure.
Would have been a different film. But no, he wants to get naughty with Saoirse. Mm. She says no a bunch of times, even pulls a knife of him, but knife on him. He talks around. It's a weird scene, this.
It's weird for me because he's saying, like, you're my moon and my stars, and without you. And I think he says, I dwell in gardens, but I had to watch it a few times. I thought he said, without you, well in gardens. And then I thought, is it just a British? And I honestly thought, because I know that a lot of these things are shot in England, and you'll have a lot of English cast and crew, and obviously it's an American production, and they maybe aren't as familiar with Welling Garden City as we are. But I just thought it was one of those sneaky jokes that finds its way in, which is like, without you, I'm sort of down in Welling Garden City. But I think he said, I dwell in gardens.
Yes.
I mean, I really thought it.
Yeah, he didn't. it's interesting that behind the scenes interview at the time with Val Kilmer says, we couldn't remember our lines in this love scene. Had to shoot it over and over again. I think it was a personality thing, but we figured it out.
By getting married?
Yeah, well, it was like they weren't getting on, I think, at this point. But it was maybe, you know, it was because there was a deeper feeling there.
Yeah.
But so it didn't work, this scene. And then once they did get together, they reshot the scene when there was proper sexual tension happening.
That's handy,
isn't it? And they got it. But yes, now we've got the sled chase because suddenly there's snow from
out
of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah, there's loads of snow.
They shot this stuff in Queensland, in New Zealand. It's exciting, you know.
Fun. Yeah,
a bit of a roller coaster sequence. Fly off a cliff. Looks like a blast. They reach a village now, and there's some good soldiers at the village. There's some bad soldiers. They hide. They escape. It all gets a bit repetitive, I think, in terms of hiding, getting found, escaping,
losing the baby, finding the baby. Yeah. Love that.
Our fellowship takes Saoirse hostage and leave while the armies are fighting, and they end up in this cursed village where people are trapped in stone, and the enchantress gets turned into a goat. And then we've got some trolls appearing on the walls.
I like the trolls.
So they're gymnasts in monkey suits. That's cool. All practical effects. Yeah, I like them. They look great.
They look quite scary.
Trolls are imaginary creatures.
Yeah.
But I know they don't look like that.
100%.
So don't call them trolls.
Who's that trip-trapping over my bridge? Mm. It's not a hairy gymnast monkey.
Yes.
It's a big, old, bald man.
Yes.
With a warty face and quite big teeth.
Yeah.
Not that.
Not a troll.
But that is a good... I mean, in whatever. Let's reimagine trolls. Fine.
Fine. Give them a different name. Willow to give these imaginary creatures that I know what they look like. yeah. Willow turns this creature into a two-headed monster called an Eborsis.
I hate that monster.
Yeah, but the name is a combination of Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel's names.
Oh, give over. Grow the fuck up.
I think they didn't like Temple of Doom as well.
Well, whatever. I mean, just it's a brutal industry, George, and you've done very well out of it. Like, I don't know.
They gave Willow two thumbs down.
Probably.
The dragon's head explodes.
Yes.
That's good. I like the fact that the other one ends up dying because of this losing his head.
Yeah, I think that's quite good. Yeah, you can't survive.
Kale. I was going to say Pauline Kale. Kale escapes with the baby and returns to the queen, and so we get Willow's all is lost moment.
Yes.
He has a little cry.
Yeah. There was just too many of them this time. There wasn't before all the other times, but this time there was.
And then we're into the climax.
Yeah.
So they shot this finale in Snowdonia.
Very nice.
So they show up at the Queen's castle, and she laughs when she sees their numbers, and she turns some of them into pigs.
Which I like.
It's quite disturbing.
It is disturbing, and it looks painful and good and all the rest of it. The trouble is with these, I'm a stickler for like, what are the rules of the world, etc., etc. She's had real problems finding a baby, and yet she's got enough magic that she can turn people into pigs, and that seems like a disconnect for me. So it's fine. It's the trope of like, you useless henchman, you can't even find a baby. But she seems to be very powerful. And so why she couldn't just, I don't know, go into a mind palace or some shit and find a baby, I don't know. Maybe it's because it's protected by magic or something.
Yeah, and the film would be over too quickly.
Well, yes, it would.
She's dressed like a mummy under her clothes.
She is!
That's quite a strange...
It's cool, though. Because it's like, she looks like, you know, as you sort of classic medieval, evil stepmom kind of thing. And then maybe she's a mummy because she's like really decrepit and it's like holding her in. I don't know. I liked it.
Yeah. I felt like we almost needed more of it because you blink and you'd miss it. But
yeah.
It's an interesting detail.
And the rest is quite generic. Yeah.
But now we get maybe the most important moment in the film, which is when the Enchantress goat is turned into an ostrich and then a peacock and then a tortoise and then a tiger and then an old naked lady.
That's right, yeah.
So Industrial Light and Magic, George Lucas's company, had done the first computer-generated character in Young Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
The stained glass window. Yeah. Which you guys talked about when I wasn't here. And this was the next step in the digital evolution. They weren't there when they started making this film. They had to build the technology. But Lucas had faith that ILM could get where they needed to go. And they invented what they called morphing. So they wanted to lose cutaways when something transforms. You know, American Werewolf in London is a famous example where it cuts away every time it needs to. And this is the first time they used real world objects and manipulated them in a computer, photographs of real objects. So they're combining the practical with the digital. So they integrated a real tiger at one point. Mm-hmm. They shot a real tiger and put that in the computer. You do it all CG now, but they're blended from one to another, these pictures. They started working on the software in September 87. By May 1988, they had done it. They'd nailed it. And this was kind of what everyone was talking about when Willow came out, that you've never seen anything like this morphing sequence. They talk about it now looking back and they all agree we weren't there yet. We were just so close. The next step was Donovan dying in Last Crusade, another Lucas production. And then the next breakthrough was The Abyss. And then they really sort of got to the end game with Terminator 2.
Yeah.
But this was the first step 4 years before that.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. And it is, you know, it does look dated, but it's still cool. It, you know, it's exciting. I tell you the other, I think the moment the world saw it was Michael Jackson's black and white video. That was mind-blowing at the end where everyone's singing the lyrics.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And people turn into other people. And that's something that was created for Willow.
I think the you know, the progression through the animals looks good. I think that two-headed monster looks shit, but I think this looks good.
No, fair. No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Right, so we're back outside. She turns the pigs back into humans and casts a spell to protect them. There's a mention of gophers.
Yeah, now I love this because good writing. He's using his farming to win.
Agreed.
Like
agreed. He's even told Willow this is war, not agriculture. But he's got a trick up his sleeve. So the Enchantress and Willow approach the castle and give the villain an ultimatum. And then the drawbridge opens, soldiers ride out and the goodies appear from under tarpaulin in the ground like gophers, like a scene from Caddyshack. I mean, I don't buy that the Night Watchman wouldn't see or hear them digging giant holes on their doorstep. And they've got no need to open that gate. If they don't open that gate, they're just fine.
They've won.
They've won.
Go away. Yeah.
But it becomes very Helm's Deep here.
Right.
You know Helm's Deep?
No.
Okay, Lord of the Rings reference. The Enchantress battles the Queen with fire and ice up in the tower.
Cool.
Two old people fighting on the top of the tower. We see that again in Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
The battle rages outside. This second unit was directed by Joe Johnston.
Yes.
Who we've done Honey Shrunk the Kids, Jumanji and The Rocketeer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And obviously Captain America, he went on to direct. A barbecue, I think, comes to life and stalks Willow, who fights it with a trident. I mean, it might not be a barbecue. I wasn't sure what it was.
I don't know.
It looked like a barbecue to me. He chucks it out of the window. Warwick Davis said that he wanted to kill someone here. He thought it should hit someone on the way down. But George Lucas and Ron Howard told him, no way, Warwick.
You don't get to decide.
It's not right for your character to kill anyone. A brave soldier called Arik, who I haven't mentioned before.
Well, this because he's almost good. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, I wondered if, you know, I mean, when we're talking about legend, it's like it's a shame that there aren't side missions, there isn't context, there isn't whatever. And then you get all of that in Willow. You get side missions, you get a lot of context, you get a war out of nowhere. When you meet Arik, whatever he's called, and he's like, we're in the middle of a war, goddammit, doesn't say that. And you're like, what fucking war? Like, I thought this was a personal mission to return a baby, and it's about one man coming into his power and all the rest of it. And then the war is very much in this. And then when he dies, Arik is like, win this war for me. And I get it, but I wondered if it's trying to make this epic rather than personal. Mm-hmm. And I wondered if that was a mistake because Warwick Davis is so good and you're so invested in him. Do you care about this? You care about the baby and you care about the evil, but having an actual war going on feels a little bit distracting,
but
maybe.
Does it not give us what we were upset about legend not having?
Yeah, yeah. So kind of it both ways. You're right.
No.
I don't know.
You need to make up your mind, Vicky.
I do.
Typical woman.
Do you know what? It's funny you should say that. I was listening to I don't like Gardener's Question Time because I don't like gardening, but I do listen to Gardener's Question Time quite a lot. And it's 75 years old, it's the longest running panel show thing ever or something. Mm-hmm. and they played an excerpt from one of the shows from 1947, and it's filmed in the north. And so people's northern accents is you could struggle to tell what they're saying, and I should know.
Sorry, and say that again.
And it's this woman saying, she's asking a question. She's like, hiya, it's Elsie from wherever, Stockport. And she says, can you use soot on the something? And I want to use soot on this, but I've heard that you shouldn't. And I'm not so sure what to do and blah, blah, blah. And then the presenter paused. She's asked her question. And he goes, well, it's very typical of a woman to ask five questions when you're really supposed to be asking one, but I'll throw it over. And that goes unmentioned. And I heard it and I was livid for Elsie from Stockport. Mm. But it just, my blood just boiled. And it's like, that used to be all right. Mm. Like, he's not, he's trying to make a joke. He's just very typical of a woman to do that. And it's like, fuck off, man. But yeah, that's, I'm just, it just made me think of that when you just use a little bit of casual misogyny towards me there. Mm. That's what it triggered in me. So I'm just sharing that with you. We can edit this out if it's too much.
Have you finished yet?
Yeah, yeah. We're
done. Okay, now.
That's what happens. You can't handle it. Don't poke the bear, Chris.
What, if you don't like gardening, why are you watching Gardener's Question Time?
I don't like politics, but I watch Question Time. I don't like gardening.
Yeah, but that affects you.
Yeah, it does. But it also, Question Time just makes me so cross.
Oh, yeah, that's unwatchable.
I don't know what, I find Gardener's Question Time very soothing because I've got no idea what anyone is talking about. And I'm not invested in the arguments when they're like, you could never use this for this.
See, I thought you were going to say, like, you drift off to sleep to it, like some people listen to the shipping news.
No, I listen to it.
Forecast.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay. That's completely throwing me.
Sorry. So, where we're up to.
Mad Martigan fights Captain Kale and stabs him in the stomach and then pulls him onto the sword.
Yeah.
Which is pretty violent.
Yes.
And which you didn't see in the UK version.
Right.
You didn't see the pull. We were not ready for this stuff in 1988. Willow chucks an acorn at the Queen and she catches it.
Yeah.
Is that the extent of your powers, little one?
No. <It's> I can do magic.
She's very the Emperor. So Willow plans to send her into a realm where no one can touch her, and he says magic words and then the baby disappears.
Cool.
Which blows the Queen's
mind. She can't believe it. Impossible.
She gets hit by some lightning she summoned and she ends up banishing herself effectively.
Yeah.
But it's a great callback to the pig trick that
Perfect.
He did at the start of the film.
Good writing.
Because it's weird. Warwick says on the commentary that he was supposed to levitate the baby here. This other trick that he could do, but because everything was so wet in the room and his clothes were wet, they couldn't do the levitation.
Couldn't get it up. Okay.
Just couldn't get it up. And so they used the pig trick, but
that makes much more sense.
It makes much more sense, Warwick.
There's a writer somewhere going, yes, I told you to use the fucking pig trick.
Set up.
I set
off.
It up 2 hours ago.
But because of, I mean, Enchantress then appears and she's got scratches all over her face.
Yeah.
That was cut from the fight earlier, so we don't see how she got those scratches. But we're in the postscript now. Warwick, a bit like the end of Star Wars when they received their medals, Warwick receives a book. He's on his way to becoming a great sorcerer. On the commentary, Warwick said he was gutted. He's the only one that doesn't get new clothes or a new hairdo.
Oh, bless him.
Saoirse has the baby now.
She does.
It feels like Willow should have the baby.
Yeah, there's this whole thing about it has to be raised by tall people, isn't it? Or giants or whatever they call the... I mean, I know what you mean. But I also thought, and I was reaching, that maybe they were half-sisters. So maybe the reason why Saoirse disobeys her mum so flagrantly is because she understands that she might be related to this baby in some way. Or something. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I read some weird details that apparently in this film that I didn't pick up on. So Saoirse's father is a noble-hearted king. He was seduced and manipulated by Bavmorda.
Great. There's a prequel you want to see.
And she took Saoirse away. Apparently, he's encased in the stone in that sequence that we saw earlier. And in a deleted scene, asks Saoirse for help. Though she doesn't know her father, his goodness is innate within her and contributes to her redemption. And at the film's conclusion, and I went back and watched the scene again to try and pick this up. At the film's conclusion, the king can be seen reunited with his daughter when they bid farewell to Willow.
No.
No.
No. I miss that.
It's just
you can't just say stuff like that and expect people to understand that.
But it's all useful stuff.
Yes.
For Saoirse's backstory.
Someone just needs to say it out loud in front of her. Yeah. Your father's goodness was within you, child.
Give us this stuff. But back to Willow. He returns home, the all-conquering hero, and he sees his wife, and I think they really sell this moment when they run into each other's arms.
Yeah, of course.
It's just very sweet, and those kids are lovely
actors. Those kids are amazing.
Yeah, and that's a very happy ending.
Yeah, it is.
I think. The trailer for this film, which I watched the other day, said this story couldn't be told on the small screen. That isn't true because we have got this TV show coming this year.
Warwick Davis. That is PR bullshit.
We don't have a date yet, but I'll be reminding you as and when, so you can re-listen to this show because I'm sure you'll want to do your homework.
More homework.
But that's all I've got for Willow.
Lovely.
Okay, let's do the bits and bobs. Favourite scene, Vicky?
Two old witches fighting. Just because, I mean, as with some, there's so many set pieces in this film, and all of them more or less are good. Some of them are repetitive. We've got two fights in a castle, which I don't think we need. And maybe all the set pieces are almost ruined by the length. Like, everything is a little bit overdone for me. Mm-hmm. And this is almost ruined as well. But you just don't get to see two older women going for it like that. And
100%.
It's good.
It's so refreshing. It's so unusual. You know, Marvel and DC and everyone's trying to figure out how to end their movies without having the big city war.
Yeah, everything
citywide
exploded.
War. Yeah, and this is a great way. And it works brilliantly in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
It works well here. I could have done with more of it, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Make it more brutal. I guess they must have done if she scratched her face. I would have liked more of that. And if I had more of that, it would have been my favourite scene. But I don't have a favourite scene, really. So I'm going to go back to childhood when I did have a favourite scene.
Sure.
And that is the sled through the snow. Mm-hmm. I absolutely loved that when I was a kid. It looked brilliant.
And fun.
And fun. And it was definitely my favourite bit when I was a kid. So I'm picking that, even though I now see that it's a steal from Temple of Doom. You know, the opening sequence.
Yeah.
So classic Georgie Porgy. Most valuable whatever.
Well, this won't come as a surprise, but it's two little babies called Ruth and Kate Greenfield as Laura Denham. I just can't believe how good those babies are. Mm. I'm fascinated by people that put their babies up for casting because I wonder how it is. Does it make you feel, you know, your babies are being handled by other people that you don't know on a film set, which can be a dangerous place, certainly long hours and all the rest of it. How does it work? Why do it? Like, why? What draws you to it?
Well, those were the hero babies, as they would call it in the trade. But there were quite a few babies used because they shot it all over the place.
Right.
I think they were the English ones. They used different babies in New Zealand. And I believe at one point, someone working on the film let their baby be used. That makes much more sense, I think. If you're on set already...
Well, yeah, I suppose George Lucas says, so we don't have money for a creche as such or any childcare provision. I mean, what you could do...
You get paid extra, but...
I fucking hope so. I just think the babies are good. Like,
yes.
I mean, they're super cute. They made me want to have two more babies, which I will not do. And that never happens.
You've had three hairy babies.
I've had three babies. But if I have one, I can't have one more.
No, you've got three new babies.
Oh, my fur babies. Yeah. I hate people say fur babies. Sorry, I just scowl my mouth out. That is vile. They are my children. Yeah.
Okay. My most valuable ever is something I heard in the trailer for Three Musketeers and the trailer for Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and I'd forgotten it was actually Willow's theme, and that's the music written by James Horner.
Yeah.
Who is... this is his ninth film.
He's creeping up, isn't
he?
Yeah,
Commando, Aliens, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Rocketeer, Jumanji, Deep Impact, The Grinch, Avatar, and now Willow.
Because there's only three, I think it's, there's only three film score composers in in the world, so...
Yeah, four. We've got Goldsmith, Horner, John Williams and Hans Zimmer.
That's the one.
That's it. It's the four.
There are only four. Yeah.
But
once they've gone, silence in all films. Back to silence.
But it's quite sweet. He recorded it with a Philharmonic Orchestra, and little Warwick Davis went to visit him to hear the music and get his Alien soundtrack signed.
Cool.
Bless him. And if you could change anything, what would you change?
I think I've got a little bit of a problem with the way that Willow uses magic. It's such an important part of the story, which is he doesn't believe in himself. You know, he picks the wrong finger and he nearly had it and he's failed before. And by the end of it, he's on his way to becoming a great Jedi. And he only ever tries to use magic at a point that wouldn't affect the plot, apart from when he throws the acorn. But when he's with the sorceress, Razel, She's like, try it. And he's like, well, we've got a spare moment by a campfire, so I'll try it. Or we'll try it, but it should be, I'm in danger and it needs to work and it doesn't work. But equally, they're just words. And so a quick fix would be, it's an incantation along the lines of, I'm an awesome sorcerer and I believe in myself. And he says it at first and he doesn't believe in himself, it doesn't work. And so you get the, you know, the actor can do the acting with the words, but they're words that make sense to us so that you can go, oh, now you believe in yourself and therefore you are magic. That's it.
Yep. No, I agree. I mean, I've got an issue with just the magic stuff takes up too much time early on as well.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think they are too set in their ways when they cast Warwick Davis. I think they obviously wanted him from the start. George did. I mean, he planned it years in advance. So don't give him a wife and child. I mean, he's already a parent. I think you can make him a 17-year-old who learns about parenting while doing all this.
Yeah.
And that's connected to getting on with it at the beginning. The failing farm, not interested in. Mm. The forming of the fellowship, they disappear straight away.
They do, yeah.
They don't matter.
Yeah.
So just get him on the adventure as quickly as you can. He finds the baby, there's dogs chasing him, he's suddenly on the run. And then you can find about him wanting to be a sorcerer and being a bad sorcerer during the adventure. He's maybe trying to impress Mad Martigan when he's in the cage and he messes up.
You can
get all this stuff done and lock 20 minutes off the beginning of the film and we're straight into the adventure.
Yeah, what it needs.
So that would be my change. And that's that.
Great.
So I think it is time for the verdict, Vicky.
Lovely.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
So I think you should go first.
I'll keep it quick because I have a lot of love for Tim Curry, but I realised the depth of my soft spot for Val Kilmer this week, which I'd kind of forgotten. I just do very much enjoy that man. And I mean, Willow has got the possum. I was just really taken with. Love that possum. And those babies have really, really affected me. So Tim Curry nearly swings it, but because of all those other elements, and even though the length of Willow, I know that's such a dry thing to say, but it really puts me off. Like,
it does. Several times I wrote, this is a slog.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be. It should just be light and fun and all the rest of it. But anyway, because of the baby and the possum and Val Kilmer, Tim Curry's been bested, unfortunately, by Willow.
Mm-hmm. Okay. For me, I mean, Legend is obviously the more stylish movie, although it felt like Enya the movie. Could that be a thing?
That's a great idea.
But that's about it. I think the story's too slight and the director's cut is better, but the whole thing is a bit grim and miserable and I don't really like the characters. I didn't enjoy it then. I don't enjoy the film now. Has my opinion of Willow changed? No, not really. It still bores me a little bit, but I like what it's about. The least likely hero rising to the occasion. There's something charming about that. That message that it doesn't matter how big you are, that appeals to me personally. One little person can make a difference, as I prove week in, week out on this podcast.
You've got forward momentum, don't forget.
So as it has more likeable characters, stronger message, a more coherent story, I'm voting for Willow, which makes Willow our winner.
Yes.
But I did reach out to our MIA pal, Alex Zane. I said, if we're at a stalemate, are you voting for Legend or Willow?
And he said, new phone, who this?
He said, 1,000% it won't be a stalemate. Willow. I wrote, haha, agreed. Any words to explain? And he wrote, Willow is great fun and my favourite Val Kilmer performance after Tombstone.
Yeah.
What about the Doors? What about the Doors, Alex?
The Doors for me.
And he adds, Legend is so bad, even the great Tim Curry can't save it, which is exactly what you said. Yeah. So, yeah, 3 for 3, Willow is our winner this week.
Perfect.
And that's your lot. But before we go, we've got to talk about next week.
That's right.
Vicky,
yeah.
Your first clue was?
Feeling sad. 18 months of nice weather can really change your mindset.
Interesting.
Thanks.
We followed it up with something else on Twitter that I haven't come up with yet. And the solution to those clues is...
Next week, we will be watching Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which is on Netflix, Amazon and Sky, and 500 Days of Summer, which is on Disney, Amazon and Sky.
Good work, Vicky.
Thanks.
So, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and 500 Days of Summer. Those are two quite long titles to say, but that really is your lot. Aside from me asking you, begging you to come visit us on Twitter and Instagram at ClashPod and then give us a like or a review or a subscribe or just tell a friend that their life will improve immeasurably if they give us a go. Maybe starting Monday when we'll be back with Eternal Sunshine. of the Spotless Mind.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.